Yo, it looks like we've got Night Nation in the chat already. So we'll hold off on Cal L and let me switch over here. Let me just unmute this tab. I'm going to mute system audio here. I'll unmute this tab and then we'll bring Nick in. There he is, and he should be live with us now. What's going on?
Hey,
Hey, sounds good.
what is
Everybody
up?
here, everything okay? I think we got what we need here. So we tested some of this earlier. I'll switch the view here. This is going to look a little bit more professional, kind of like Night Nation show does. So
Nice.
now, yeah, this is, I kind of like the dashboard, but we tested this a little bit earlier and the communications work well, but I never tested the audio. And so I found out right before the show that if I turn down the audio that Restream plays back to me, the audience, it's the output, it kills the output from Restream. So I have to actually mute the tab so that I don't hear it, so that it doesn't become, a loop. And so we figured out the workarounds just to mute the tab while I'm playing music and then unmute it while I'm talking to you. But it kills the ability to switch back and forth easily. You know what I mean? So these things you don't find out until you're live, unfortunately. But I think we got it under control. Thanks for joining the show, brother.
Absolutely, man. How are you doing?
I've been doing okay. It's you know how it is. Well, you actually have a show. I kind of do more of a stream, so I got a library I play music out of. I do some hot takes, but I don't really pull together a lot of content. It's a little different for you because you actually put on a proper show. It takes quite a bit of of prep. You kind of have a show theme, that you're gonna do. How much extra work is that outside of the stream itself? How many hours a day do you spend prepping?
I mean, first of all, I would say you have your own show. I say you're going more for entertaining our guys, which is absolutely necessary, dude. Like, people need to be able to chill as well. They don't only need like stressful information. But I mean, I'll tell you, like, each episode, it's probably about a minimum of an hour prep, but sometimes it goes to two or more.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's some work. I mean, it's some work to pull together content and try to keep it thematic and keep, people interested. With music, I kind of sometimes feel like I got it easy. The morning slot is pretty conducive to, just a casual show. It's a little different in prime time though. You get a much bigger crowd. The crowd demands to be entertained and informed, and it's quite a demand sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it can be, dude. It can be. I mean, you feel like an obligation. I feel like an obligation. Like, I don't want to waste people's time. I've said it this way for a long time. Like, all of us as people, I mean, we have like a limited time on this planet, and if people choose to spend some of that time with me, I want to make sure I bring it, I want to make sure that they didn't waste their time hanging out with me, and hopefully I could teach them something or entertain them or hopefully make them chuckle, even though I'm not comedy focused. Hopefully we can work a few chuckles in there.
Oh yeah, you do a good job of it. And in fact, I actually I prefer I don't get a lot of time to watch streams as you know. I spend a lot of time streaming myself, and then I spend a lot of time doing production, whether it's making songs, audiobooks, things like that. So I'm getting where I'm trying to get it down under 15 hours a day, but it gets exhausting after a while, and so I kind of like that you appreciate people's time. That's the one thing I feel most grateful for is that people spend time in the morning, because 4 in the morning coming to a niche platform is not something that most people, are willing to do. So the people that are willing to do it, I try to make sure that give them something good. Do you kind of feel the same, when it comes to, or I guess I actually would ask you a different question. What does Nick watch whenever he's not streaming? I always find this to be an interesting question. A lot of people are surprised to find out that I only watch pretty much NNR at night when I've got
Based.
time.
Very based. that's a good question. Well, if I am on the rare occasion up real early in the morning, I watch the Flood Show. If I am up that early,
Yo, let's
that's the
go.
thing is, I'm always sleeping when you're on, man. But no, sometimes I had to go to a doctor's appointment the other day. Fantastic. I have to be up way at the ass crack of dawn for me, and I'm like, oh well, what's on? Oh, Flood Show. So that, man, it's great. It's great what you do. And I'll say. I do have a list of shows I watch. Obviously, Stack is a big one. Blackpilled, Red Ice is a big one. Tim, Modern Politics is a really good one. War Strikes sometimes. I don't get to watch all of this because they go for so long, but usually I catch like 30 minutes, something like that, 45 minutes of it. But yeah,
Yeah,
man,
War
I know
Strike
what you
gives me a
mean.
headache. If I watch too much War Strike, my head will be swimming and I'll have nightmares of things. Like they pack a lot into a show. Those guys put in some work. But it's nice to know that, you hang out the Flood Show when you get a chance. We try to keep it, you know, casual, but positive, you know, high energy, kind of get people up and ready for the day. It's a little different at night because people want to wind down, you know, they kind of want to be informed, and, you know, it doesn't hurt to crack a few jokes and stuff. But generally, I think the feedback has been pretty good. I've kind of seen things going a little bit down, but that's kind of normal for the holiday season. Do you see kind of the same patterns in late night?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a slowdown around the holidays. You know, people spending their money on their Christmas presents and hanging out with their family, and it just kind of it just generally does that. But, you know, I mean, it's funny because it does kick back up pretty hardcore after the Christmas passes. You know, it tends to have a big upswing in the new year generally.
I personally think last year I streamed all through Thanksgiving and the holidays, and it was crazy. Like it was the revenue was fine, but I noticed the crowds go away. You know, they go travel, they have like family time, and then they don't want their family to know that they're Nazis or racists, so they, you know, they don't tune in. But I think it's interesting. Now your show is a little bit different. You kind of do a variety show. You talk a lot about current events. You cover a lot of news and politics and things like that. Do you ever find that to be like blackpilling? Does that ever discourage you from covering that content?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Like literally yesterday I tried to do one on geopolitics based on what's going on in South Korea. And there was another thing going on in Syria. I couldn't do it. I almost tapped out halfway through. I kind of did, really, because it's like, I've started to get more into the history stuff of like, how did we get here? Like, how do we find ourselves in this position? I think that there is a value to that. It's in a way not as exciting. I think people do like there's something more kind of thrilling, I guess, about like what happened today. Like, oh crap, like look at this, boom, it blew up. Oh shit, nigga, whoa. You know, but like after a while, I mean, man, you get burned out, dude. You get burned out on it. I can't even do it anymore. And also the other side of that, dude, is that I feel like that content is not very evergreen at all. Like it rots real fast. You make it and then like 2 weeks later, it's like nobody's gonna watch that again. Why would they?
I try doing it and I end up chasing my tail because you end up following the same psyops, you know, that like the UFO thing they were throwing out over the last couple of days. You know, everything tells me that this is bullshit. This is some sort of psyop, but it's so sensationalized that that's what people want to hear about. And and I don't like to get into where I'm just telling the crowd, like, look, this is all crap. You shouldn't listen to that. Cause I don't want to be, you know, telling people what to watch and stuff. But man, everything to me just seems to be bullshit these days, especially in the mainstream media. Have you noticed it really hard to find like even stories worth reporting on?
Well, yeah, dude, that's absolutely a thing. You know, I've had some bigger supporters that have been like, man, like I don't even want to see this like CNN and MSNBC, Fox News shit. He's like, man, I turned all that shit off a decade ago. Like, but you all want to show me that shit. So I get his position. And my response to that was like, well, man, like, you know, where else are we going to get this footage from? You know, like I looked into it, dude. I'll tell you this too. This is a little inside baseball. I went looking. I was like, okay, so what if I want to just buy the raw footage and be like, you know, Night Nation reporter, right? And just like do it all myself. Like I have the raw footage and I just tell the story like I'm a news program. And you know what it is, dude? It's like $10,000 for like a single event's worth of footage. It's insane. And I think that's like a way that they kind of gatekeep that away. So if you want to show the current event stuff, you end up showing like, you know, mainstream Jewish media shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you can't get away from it. Like unless you're out getting your own footage, you know, you kind of have to have something to show people. And I get that people, they don't want to watch mainstream media. We're kind of the new media now. But the best that we can kind of do is just spin the media that they can already see over on Fox. Am I right? Like, unless you have like money and a staff and you can send people into the field to get stuff for you, you got to work with the same thing that they've got to work with, which is mainstream crap, right? Like just, so I end up rolling the same footage over and over and over and really just kind of changing the hot take, you know? So it kind of becomes, I don't want my show to become a habit, but that's, you're kind of forced into one, right? Like you're kind of forced into the same old stuff again. You ever have that problem?
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. That's the thing, right? You get in a groove and it can be a good groove or it can be a really kind of nasty. You're stuck in a groove, you know. it's rough, man. It's really rough. It's hard to do that. It's hard to not repeat the same old jokes, same old memes, same old takes. You kind of gotta keep trying to press it to get like some new perspectives and stuff. And it's tough, man. It's not easy. I think people underestimate it. There's a way you can do it. Like, I've seen people where they just like literally just do only other people's shows. And don't get me wrong, like, I've covered some other people's stuff. Like, I've covered a lot of modern politics, but you know, like, if that's only thing you do, that's not so cool.
Right. I do the same thing. It's actually nice to take a day out of the normal schedule, cover a modern politics or cover something that somebody else did. The other day we watched the Count Dankula thing on Terry Davis that was fantastic. You know, he does a great show. He puts together a nice video. I think I sent you the link on that too, by the way. It's called Mad Lads. He's got it's kind of a series where he goes and covers different Mad Lads, cultural Mad Lads. And man, Terry Davis was a legend, as you know, and really did a good job, but it's nice to be able to check somebody else's stuff. Another thing I've noticed is you have really good guests. Like you have the ability to land some really high profile guests, guys that would never do my show. And I find that those are some of the best NNRs. Like your thousandth episode was amazing. You had four really big guests, right?
Yeah.
If you guys missed that, it's definitely worth checking out Nick's 1000th show.
Yeah, well, you know, that one really went well. And in spite of some of the bullshit that was going on the periphery of the whole scene at the time, yeah, we were able to snuff that bullshit out and focus on the actual show. And honestly, I think it went really well. You know, it was what I wanted. I wanted it to be sort of a memorable thing. You know, the 500th show was like that too, where both Warren and Emily came on. And I was only lucky enough to have that happen, I think, because I actually met them in person at a NJP event. So they like, you know, I got to actually like interact with them in the real meat world. So, you know, they knew I wasn't just simply like some internet weirdo, right? So that kind of helped.
I know the internet weirdo part very well.
I'm familiar with that.
I do a lot of it. Like for every show that I land, I probably send out 10 invites, you know, and I often invite the same people over and over. I try not to be, you know, annoying to them, but I'm interested in certain people and I want them to come on and talk to them. We do this Big Brain series. You've been on it.
I watched some of them. They're really good, man. It's a really good,
it's great direction. And when white people have these conversations, man, awesome things happen. I've noticed the same as you. You're able to get guys like Simon Crims, Warren, Emily, as you mentioned. You had Devin Stack. I mean, those are big names. You're a heavy hitter in the.
Thanks, man.
I think you're kind of sandbagging a little bit. You know.
You know, it's really hard to get some of those ones. Like, so that was the second time Devin came. It was really hard to get him on the first place. But, you know, once you talk to somebody like that and they realize, okay, well, this guy is he just shares my views. It's more or less, you know, similar to me. Then it's not that hard to get him again. But I know what you mean, man. I had to kind of, I don't want to say beg him, but kind of beg him for about a year to get that to happen. And sometimes it's like that, especially if you just know them through the internet, if you never met them in real life. And that's the majority of them, you know. But I'll say this too, as far as your Big Brain series goes, great direction. I liked it. I've seen some of them. They're really good. And I'll tell you this part too, as far as you getting big guests, the more you do this and the more you, you know, make a, what'd you call it? Like a repertoire of things you've already done, a big kind of catalog of successful interview shows and stuff. Then, you know, people that you want to get on, you can point them to that and be like, well, look at this. And they'll feel better about it. You know, the prospect of it they'll know exactly what they're getting into is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah. I agree. That's one of the reasons I try to kind of put it out there. And recently, I've started doing a little bit more marketing on Twitter. I've noticed you doing the same. Have you had success with that? Have you noticed that Twitter's kind of a useful tool for getting your show out there across people that maybe wouldn't see it? I've noticed you in a couple of spaces as well. Have you enjoyed those, and have you noticed a kind of an increase in your audience from that?
Yeah, I think so, man. I mean, the real value of Twitter, I think, is that the ability to network with these kind of people that you'd like to talk to or have on your show, interact with, you know, this kind of thing. I mean, it's really useful for that. And look, as much as Musk is not like our guy or whatever, he's kind of created enough space that we can kind of do our thing. And, you know, as long as you don't push it too hard, you know, you can probably get away with it. You keep it professional, you'll stay up there. And the biggest thing is, man, you got to just, it's a networking tool, you know, it's a networking tool and it works. So that's a big thing. We used to all have to do it through Telegram and, Telegram is fucking brutal for that.
Yeah, it is. It is. Telegram's horrible. I've tried to get away from it as much as I can, especially since it came out that they basically have handed that over to the authorities, you know, for monitoring. Yeah. So, yeah, we're always ever dealing with, you know, hit pieces. We've got subversive Jews in the audience that are reporting your stuff to SPLC. And then, you know, who knows what other kind of nefarious characters are always kind of lurking in the shadows. Have you noticed, I don't think they did a digital threat report this year, but they did one last year. And I think you made the report. I made the report. Mm-hmm. A couple other people made the report. Have you found yourself a lot in other media?
Fortunately, no. Fortunately, they haven't taken too much of an interest in me. I'm sure that won't last forever. I've kind of enjoyed that they haven't, to be honest with you. Right. You know, like you do, like, we kind of do view it as a trophy, you know, in a way when they do, because it's like, look, you know, I'm over target enough that they're afraid of me. They're worried about me. At the same mm-hmm. time, it's like also a headache because you're like, you never know what they're going to be able to do. A lot of times they write those articles not because a lot of people are going to read them or something. Instead, they write them just because it gives a pretext so that when they want to get you banned from something, in the email they send to try to get you banned, they include that article. It's like, here's the evidence. This guy's a piece of shit, super evil Nazi, going to gas all the Jews. And this kind of crap, right? And then, well, you know, it works, unfortunately.
Yeah, it does, and that's exactly what they did to me with 11 Labs. They got my accounts closed down over there, and they caused me a little bit of a headache. It you know, everything's become a series of workarounds. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I agree. Like they're basically doing it as a pretense, and then using their own material as evidence. We've seen this happen so many times in the past 10 years. It's crazy. How do we fix this? Like, how do we decrease the effect that the Jew-controlled media has on our people and yet still try to increase our footprint, try to get our takes out there? Are we going in the right direction, you know, with these streams and, you know, trying to organically grow? Or is there something that we should be trying differently, do you think?
On a whole, I think we are. I mean, so far, basically there's three workarounds I found. The first one is we build our own stuff, and you know about that. I mean, you've even built like the Flood Social thing, so that's pretty fucking cool, and I would say do that. The second workaround is to try to, I mean, I hate to say optics, but it's to try to sort of like, you know, market in such a way that is a little less screaming, come get me, I guess.
Right.
That's number two option. And you know, there's always mixed feelings in this whole scene about that. Some people say, fuck that, that's cucking. Some people say it's smart and strategy. I tend to kind of go a little bit in between, and I kind of lean a little more on the strategy side of that one. And the third one is to try to get around it and try to build audience, because we're getting pretty much no help from any kind of algorithm. The only other workaround is to try to network, to try to do what you're doing here. You know, try to get people on that share similar views, let their audience have a look at what you're doing and vice versa. And then that kind of builds the web out, you know, and that's the only thing I've found that works other than those first two things. So that's kind of my three pack of things to work around their censorship complex, because, you know, like as much as I hate to admit it, it is true that unfortunately their censorship of us has been pretty effective.
Yeah, it has. It has. There's no doubt that we see the effects. I've been looking around at other stuff, and the optics thing you mentioned is quite legitimate. Like, I'll see somebody like a White Rabbit or a Red Ice who is not, they're not really overtly National Socialist. They're not throwing Romans, and they get a different crowd. They get a pretty big crowd. There's no doubt that, that certain iconography, you know, certain kind of stuff turns people off. And so there's a time and a place for those things. You know, I tend to believe, I'm all over the spectrum too. There's times where optics are out the window, and there's times where, you know, you're not going to get the guest that you want, you know, if you're not acting like a, you know, someone they want to be associated with, because that same media that wrote that hit piece on you will associate that person with you if they know that it causes them problems, you know, and we've seen these tactics from lots of different sides.
Well, that's exactly it, right? Like when I would think about optics or this kind of thing, or marketing, it's probably a better way to put it, is marketing and strategy. To me, it's much less about like, is it going to piss off Jews and blacks or something? To me, it's much more about like, am I going to lose respect with the people I respect? Mm-hmm. You know, that's the thing that actually concerns me most of all. and all this other stuff about, like, you know, what, you know, the SPLC is going to say or something. Like, they're going to hate us no matter what. So, like, you know,
right.
Who gives a shit what they think? But when it comes to, like, you know, is it, let's put it this way. Like, let's say I wanted to have, like, a Jared Taylor on my show, or I wanted to have somebody like that, right? People from, let's say, well, I guess VDare has been destroyed by these people, but something like that, right? It's where it's somewhat respectable. It's kind of between us and the mainstream. You know, like, I want to be able to get them on and not have them be afraid that it's going to be a hit piece coming out that really fucks them up, or, you know, this kind of stuff, like, just makes their life harder. And then they think twice. They go, I don't know, man. Yeah. Like, let's take the swastika, for example. Beautiful symbol, powerful symbol, inherently Aryan symbol. But it also does scream, hey, Jews, come over here and look at me, right? So it's like, you know what I mean?
Yes,
like,
so
it's a double edged sword, really, in that sense.
Definitely. I've definitely had, I was quoted in an article for saying something like the next Hitler is out there. Actually, they picked one of the most mundane things I've ever said to report. But I've noticed that exactly what you said. What they do is they use cherry pick stuff to conflate you with other groups of people that you actually have no connection to. I saw them do this forever with Twitter spaces. They were basically hanging out in Twitter spaces. They were network mapping everybody. And then if you happen to go into that space and have a, you know, and speak more than, you know, a couple of days in a row, then suddenly you were connected then to this network map, which they eventually connect all the way to Hamas and enemies in the Middle East, like just normal American right wing, you know, kind of edgelord, Jew namers. Are suddenly, you know, Hamas sympathizers, and, you know, just we've all seen the way the mainstream media just ties this all up and just sticks a Hamas label on you, and that like you said, it's not because they're trying to convince anybody that you're Hamas. It's because they're going to use that as a pretext for some future operation. You know what I mean? And that's really where the ominous feeling of it all comes from. They use this as a pretext for you to get raided by the DOJ someday or something like that. It seems.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, they make you out to be the villain, right? And if you think about it, like, most of us, I mean, there are some, I'm not going to lie, there are some people that push it pretty hard, but most of us are basically pointing out things that are true, that are just facts. And it's just facts they don't want out there, right? It's shocking facts, right? It's it's not stuff that, we're not making it up. We're not, like, you know, making shit up about, oh, you know, they just sacrificed a baby in the tunnel. And maybe they did sacrifice a baby in the tunnel. But, you know, if we don't know that, most of us won't say that unless we know it for, you know, confirmable fact. But they'll make it out like we're just inventing this shit when it's like, really, no. We're literally playing, you know, compilations of 50 rabbis saying the same thing we're saying. And, you know, we're just saying it from a negative context. They're just saying it as if it's a good thing.
I've seen people on Twitter do exactly that. They will even take, I think Doomsayer maybe did it, but he made an awesome video of rabbis saying what they think, what's in their text, what's in the Talmud about Amalek, and simply just compiled rabbis basically giving their view on Christians. And that video got, I think, flagged as hate speech, you know, and it's literally them talking. He didn't even say anything.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And it is hate speech. It's Goy hate Twitter.
Yeah, this is supposed to be the free speech, you know, the big free speech thing that all the boomers are, you know, are buying into Elon Musk now. But they're absolutely applying, like, hate speech, like the definition of hate speech from the, you know, the one they're trying to pass in, on all the states now, the one that Congress tried to adopt last year. I think they did, actually. Kristi Noem also adopted it in South Dakota. But it basically says that if you tell the truth about, you know, about Jews, then that's hate speech, even if it's true. That's absurd.
It's incredibly crazy. It's like, what the fuck? What? Literally what? It doesn't really make any sense. I mean, it just, all it tells us is something simple, right? It tells us that they want to do whatever their agenda is, and they don't want anyone else that's not friendly to them pointing out or discussing what their agenda is. So that means, you know, it's a bad thing, because if it was a good thing, then they'd be happy for it if they really were proud of it.
You know, you mentioned the agenda. Ultimately, what is the agenda? Is it Noahide law in the USA? Is that what they're going for? Is it something even more nefarious?
I'd say it's a lot more nefarious. I'd say that really it's actual Zionism. So Zionism is not merely like the Jews should have a state. That's what they tell the public, right? The real truth about Zionism is that it's a world domination plan. It's a world domination plot, you could say. And, you know, this way pre-extends, you know, the foundation of Israel, Theodore Herzl, all this stuff. It predates all that. But they don't want really people thinking about this or talking about this. They don't want people, you know, getting into the details. They don't want people, you know, explaining all of this to the public in a sensible way like I just did. Because to them, if that message can get out, then the public is going to go, wait a minute, do I really want my country, or even worse, the whole world run by these like psychotic Jews, the same psychotic Jews that just massacred like, what, 180,000 people in Gaza or something?
Oh, you that's know, hate like, speech, Nick. Don't say that. Yeah.
Damn, man.
That's anti-Semitism. Yeah.
I did an anti-Semitism.
But but you're right. It's a fact, though. And everybody's watched it, and we all have to act like we didn't see it.
Yeah, you're expected to.
Yeah,
you expect it to. So, I mean, that's what it comes down to, right? Like, I think that you can get way more. Oh, let me put this out too. You can get way more attention if you're screaming and yelling kike and all this stuff. You can, and people will pay attention to it. But you have to ask yourself: is it not all attention is good attention? And I don't just mean like good attention as in like people you want watching versus like, you know, SPLC or something. I mean like, is it attention that's going to yield the results you want it to yield? Right. And I think that a lot of times, you know, this is why I've kind of always tried to avoid the sort of shock jock thing too much, because, you know, I could probably have a much bigger audience, but, you know, why are they watching? Right. And personally, my goal is to get this information out there because it's ugly. I don't want to live in the world they want to build. I think it would be a fucking horror show for Gentiles. And I think that they say it outright. They want us to basically be slaves. And, you know, in a sense, they already got that. I mean, that's kind of what the Federal Reserve is, right? We are financial slaves already.
Yes. Yes. I think a lot of it is exactly that. Like, they don't want you to even bring attention to things that they've already done long ago, mm-hmm. you know? So it seems like we just live in this world of constant distractions, yet those distractions are Israel. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I was watching, I think, 10 minutes of Fox News. And they mentioned Israel probably 50 times during that 10-minute segment. Never said America, never said anything. They never say the word whites, but they talk about the Jews in Israel nonstop. And then the boomers just don't even notice it. They've been completely desensitized to it now. How do you undesensitize somebody? Can you? How do you sensitize somebody, I guess I should say? Undesensitize. Stupid.
Well, how do you make them care?
Yeah.
I think, you know, that goes back to meeting people where they're at, right? Like, we can always try to get people to talk about or pay attention to what we care about. But the problem with that is it's a lot harder. It's a lot more difficult to get them on the same page right away. And beyond that, it's well, it's certainly harder. I guess that's the key
point. It's a tough question. It is a tough
question. Yeah, it's more of an uphill battle to do it that way. And I think the other thing is you got to kind of do that. You got to find a way to make it connected to them, connected to their personal life, connected to their experience. If it's just some abstract thing like, oh, you know, someday they want to conquer the world and, you know, Noah hide us out and all this stuff. Well, that's like sounds very scary, but a lot of people be like, oh, yeah, sure, dude, whatever, right?
Right.
But if you can kind of connect it to what's going on, you make it personal. You know, you find out what they care about, and chances are something that they're bothered by is actually connected to this very issue, right? So, like take average conservatives, right? Like, they don't like the border thing probably as much as we do. The border thing we see as white genocide. Mm-hmm. They see it as like, oh no, Democrat voters coming in. So it's like we have to make them understand. Yes, the border thing is terrible, but it's not terrible for the reason you're told it's terrible. It's terrible for racial reasons. It's terrible because Jews did this to us. It's terrible for those kind of reasons. It's not because they're going to be more Democrat voters, although they will be, but that's a side effect more than anything.
What's crazy is like we're already into the cultural degradation so much that if you bring up the idea of something like race mixing or miscegenation, you're talking about their grandkid already. You know what I mean? And suddenly you're just another racist, you know, you're just a poor white trash racist from middle America, you know, and they've already stereotyped all this. It's all been set up already. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we know that this is how they've destroyed nations for millennia, is by bringing in foreigners and then mixing those people together, you know? But yeah, how do you interest somebody that's not interested in history? They just think that, you know, that doesn't matter now. We're 500 years down the road. They don't see the patterns. This is a very difficult thing to overcome. Do you think, I mean, ultimately, I think hammering people over the head with it over and over isn't really getting us anywhere. But I've noticed that people are starting to talk. I am starting to see conversations like this one where people are, you know, are throwing stuff out on the table and they're sharing ideas and they're trying different things. Right. So I think as long as we're open to that, then there's room for success. But we can't be successful if we just keep trying to hammer, you know, Hitler forever. Right. Like National Socialism was great, but reading Mein Kampf is not exactly going to solve the problems. It may give some background into the kind of mind and what he had to sacrifice to do that, you know, but even then, history works against you. All this brainwashing works against you. The Shoe Museum works against you. I call it the Shoe Museum, but the Holocaust has been a huge problem for us because they've been able to shut down all conversation because of it.
No, well, exactly. I mean, often this has come into the discussion, right? Like the fixing of Hitler's image is going to have to be part of the liberation of white people on a large scale, on a zoomed out graph. Absolutely. 100% true. And that is going to be an important part of it, as is the true story of all of everything that happened from 1933 to present. But at the same time, we have to like really respect the order of operations, I think. And I think people kind of get ahead of themselves, right? They want to cut to the chase. And I think that kind of doesn't necessarily work. I think if we start to liberate white people on a more practical basis, a side effect of that, by definition, will be that the truth about these things will start to come out. So in other words, we don't have to like head, you know, directly straight forward, like, you know, Hitler's great. You were lied to. We can, that will happen. That will be a basically a side effect of what we're doing anyway. I mean, even take a look at what happened with Twitter and the you know, quasi free speech thing. Like even that kind of all of a sudden, there's a lot more honest talk about what, you know, Hitler and NS Germany really was, you know, and that was just, they didn't go and like change the policies of Twitter and be like, we're going to fix the lies of the World War II story. They didn't have to do all that, right? They just let white people talk. And once white people started to talk, well, guess what happens? The truth about Hitler and NS Germany and all this start to come out, right?
Yeah, I mean, actually, you make a perfect point, and that segues me to exactly where I was headed next. I find that these conversations always do that. The guest always naturally leads to where I was going to go next. But, you know, we've kind of seen a point, and I see Frank De Silva hanging out over in Twitter.
Oh, Frank.
What's up, Frank? It's great to see you. Also a great addition to the segue. You know, we've reached a point where, you know, this stuff was very niche information. It was a very niche undertaking and objective to kind of expose this Jewish question to the greater masses. Now, it seems like we've crossed a barrier. Maybe it was October 7th. Maybe it was some things that happened kind of in the wake of that, but something that used to be kind of the stomping ground and the territory of what were constantly stereotyped as right-wing extremists or nationalists is now being picked up by a more mainstream, almost Republican right. I don't want to say Republican right is kind of an insult now, but this is now in the wider audience, and now people that aren't, you know, hard right, white nationalist types are talking about the JQ. This conversation has kind of left the small arena that it was in. And I still see a lot of people trying to kind of dictate the conversation. It's kind of out of the cage now, right? Like it's been loosed upon the public, and now we're seeing people like Candace Owens or a Stu Peters or somebody that has a really large, audience, like Dan Bilzerian or some of these other guys are talking about the JQ. Has this thing gotten, I mean, it's kind of gotten out of the cage for us and for them, hasn't it? Like it's no longer, it's something that they can just suppress by keeping the fringe right offline, right?
Yeah, well, it was exactly it, right? Like there was only so long that they were going to be able to do what they did in like, segregating, but almost like sequestering away these topics, right? And at some point, if these people want to talk about things like communism, they're going to have to get to National Socialism. They're going to have to get to Hitler. They're going to have to get to all this stuff. They're going to have to talk about its Jewish origins. Otherwise, they're leaving out like the key element of the story. It's like making a big puzzle. You're putting that all together, and then in the middle, there's a giant patch missing, right, in the size of a shape of a Star of David. So, you know, they could do that only for so long, and I think that October 7th actually was a key thing. Really, I should say the response they did to October 7th, right? Because at that point, it made the Jewish question or Jewish problem an international and multiracial discussion. Mm-hmm. And this caused a lot of rifts, even inside of our whole scene, because a lot of people, I mean, this has been an issue that's been a torch that's been carried by white nationalists, national socialist types, you know, for the last 50 years, really. But
yeah,
as soon as they started to mass slaughter brown people, then it became, oh, right, like the Jews also fuck over brown people, too. You know, and I think we're target number one. I do. I think we're their biggest enemy. They see us as the first and foremost target. But, you know, after they're done, you know, messing us up, they want to go for them, too. And, you know, it's really ugly the crap they do to us. But for Gaza, I mean, they're just what is it now? Like 150, 100, 200,000 like dead and killed and maimed. And, you know, like that makes it multiracial just by its own nature. It's history that did that, not like some leader in our thing or something. It's not some, you know, some little clique in our thing that's like, huh, let's include the brown people. No, right. It's just history, man. It's a turn of history. We can't control that.
Once the cat's out of the bag, the whole world is looking at them now. And I think really it's frightening for them because now even the left, even the shit libs have become, you know, very wise to what the Jews have been doing. Maybe they're not exactly, you know, going to the Fred Leuchter report just yet. But I think generally the real potential for a violent response, you know, for that old pogrom number 110, I think the real threat comes from their own side, you know, more so than ours. Because to me, there were two groups of people that once this information got out, they didn't change their position at all. They didn't pivot. They didn't adjust their tactics. And one of those sides was the hard right that basically carried that 50 years, you know, keeping this thing alive. And mm-hmm. and the other was the Republican Party, who just ignores it still and acts like it's not there, you know, because they're all taking millions from Israel and the Israeli lobby. But mm-hmm. the left is reacting in a very dangerous and explosive way. And I think that's scaring the shit out of them to the point where they're going to use, you know, the campus protests and all that sort of stuff to continue the crackdown that they've always been, you know, doing. I just think they're going to accelerate it even more now. And I think we're starting to see that on Twitter. Is that kind of, I mean, what's your take on that? Do you kind of see the same thing happening?
Well, it's their worst nightmare, right? Because it means that they're getting pressed from both sides and they're getting squished in the middle. Because usually what it's been is it's been, like you said, it's been the hard right for the last, you know, what, since 45, right? But
yeah.
Now they're getting it from the left because the left has seen it as a social justice humanitarian thing. They've seen it as falsely they've seen it as Israel as a white supremacy thing because they're still unable to distinguish whites from Jews properly.
Good point.
They'll get there someday, I think. I have faith they'll start to finally click that, wait a minute, these are not the same thing, you know. But right now, anyway, it's their worst nightmare, right? Because if you think about National Socialism in a big way, that's what he did. He unified the left and the right in Germany and brought it together into one thing. He found found a way to find the absolute, like, key fundamental values that both sides cared about and unify on those. And the things that were different, well, I don't actually truly understand how he managed those differences, but he did unify around what they all cared about, and it brought both left and right together. Mm-hmm. And they're afraid of that very much. They need the political populace to be split into these two camps that they can manage and they can put up their figures.
If they can't exercise a class war, then they push for a religious war or a race war. And it seems like they've got two of those three potentially here. You know, this is something that I've heard you kind of report on this, you know, a lot, but I've never actually heard your own personal take on how do you think the second Trump administration is going to affect these dynamics? Do you have a personal take on that?
I think obviously it remains to be seen, but I think it's going to be better in some ways and a lot worse in others. So I think that in some ways, I think they burned him, and I think he's got a personal grudge against a lot of these kind of people that they, you know, they call the deep state to deracialize it, this sort of thing. But I think at the same time, you know, he's going to kind of probably go harder on a lot of these things. At the same time, though, he's going to, as far as it goes for stuff like so-called anti-Semitism, I think, you know, it's going to get weird. I think it's going to get pretty censorious. You know, some really strange things happened in the first Trump thing. So, you know, there was a lot more internet censorship. In fact, this internet censorship regime really came down full scale under Trump. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I mean, they had the birth of the alt-right under Trump. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag, you know. And I think you're probably going to see a lot of the same thing. I think you're going to see a lot of real desperate plays to sort of criminalize opposition to Jewish power without actually criminalizing it. You know, in the same way they try to criminalize guns without criminalizing them because they can't. It's just the same sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what I think we're looking at.
Well, it seems like they have to put they woke his supporters up for the election. And it seems like now they have to put them back to sleep before he actually gets back in. And I do see kind of a lot of this positioning kind of happening on Fox News. That's why I think the desensitization to Israeli problems, all these guys like Kash Patel came out and basically pledged himself to Israel yesterday. We had Kristi Noem who already did this. Now, these people are potentially heading up to DHS, the FBI. He's put together a cabinet of people that appear to be diverse racially. But the one thing they've all done is they've already committed and, you know, their support to Israel 2 months before they even take their oaths, before they even take offices. They've made it clear whose side that they're on, you know, and Israel's been the focal point of the American election this time around. I don't think any of the boomers even noticed it.
Well, I think Israel and the reaction to October 7th was the reason Trump got in. The entire ghost electorate that was there to put Biden in somehow seemingly sat this election out. You know, all those dead voters and stuff, they didn't rise from the grave this time.
Yeah.
You know,
they didn't come back to vote for Biden, that's for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, it makes you think, like, you know, in 2020, theoretically, had that ghost electorate not shown up, you know, you probably would have had Trump too already. I mean, we would have already been living in it for the past 4 years. So all they did was delay that. And I think they brought him back because of what happened there. I think they were extremely unhappy with what happened with them managing October 7 and its response. Right. I think they thought that the sort of social justice left kind of left them in the lurch because of the pressure from their own base about, hey, these are brown people. These are, you know, brown people that are oppressed. These are brown people that are being slaughtered. You know, why we don't want you sending bombs and missiles and money and helping Israel do this. You know, you're helping a genocide. So they put that pressure on, and they were, the administration responded to it. They even like withheld some bombs, this sort of stuff. Now, even then, they still did a lot of things to help Israel's genocide that go off. And they started calling him Genocide Joe. It's a pretty good meme. But So but that wasn't enough for them. They want somebody that's a little more. You know, there's a lot more Jews have voted for Trump and somebody Republican or right wing than have for forever, for decades. I mean, like POC, Jews always vote Democrat. It's 80% of them always vote Democrat. And I think they got a lot more voting Republican this time. But as you know, as we know, their real power has nothing to do with the vote. It has to do with where they put their money.
Right. Yeah, very, very interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what happens as the pressure is going to mount. I think when Trump goes in and the people don't see a reduction in inflation, when they don't see a reduction in foreign aid, they may see a break off of maybe aid to Ukraine, but there'll just be a double down for Israel. You know what I mean? Which, you know, I think ultimately, if people get back to seeing their kids go to war in the Middle East and dying, you know, is it finally going to snap with them? Is it finally going to click, or, you know, can they get them so anesthetized that they will just, that they'll just overlook that it's just another war. And then the second thing is NPR. How do they make that about white supremacy again? Right. Because everything's got to be your fault, white guy. And so it's your fault that your kids are being sent overseas to die. They've got to pull off a hell of a PR trick, but they still have control of the media. And it looks like they're going to maintain control of the White House. it seems like we got our work cut out for us as propagandists and kind of alternative media guys. What do you think? Boy, this is kind of leads to a bigger question. So where do we go from here? I know that we kind of keep doing what we're doing, but we've seen some new platforms emerge. We're seeing this conversation get bigger. Do we try to continue to kind of spin that our way? Do we need to be showing up in these focus groups and these Twitter spaces just to kind of make sure that people are analyzing this JQ correctly, you know, even though they, you know, they may have never really thought about it before. Do we have any influence over that still, or are they just going to listen to, you know, Fox News?
Oh, I think first things first, the audience needs to support the Flood Show, needs to keep it online. You got hit with the ugly consequences of the Beano Casino. And I think, you know, like you all need to, you know, support our guy. So start with that. And then beyond that, like, I think, you know, we do need to have our own media. I think that's a critical thing. But I've been trying to push for this discussion for a long time now recently that's contradictory, a long time recently. Well, I guess a long, short time. But anyway, I've been trying to push for this thing that we need to like redo this. Like our whole approach to activism or even media, like we need to kind of reinvent this thing. You know, because if we had the winning formula, then we'd all just do it, right?
Right.
If we had the leader, if we had the formula, if it was working, if we were making progress, we'd just keep doing the thing. We'd push harder. We'd double down. We'd put more resources, whatever it took, right? But we don't have it because if you really look at what's happened, we had a lot of people do a lot of attempts at nationalism, and nationalist organizations in 2023, in 2022, in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
What's left of that? Basically, Patriot Front, I guess Blood Tribe is still around. White Lives Matter is still around. NJP folded. There's been some others that have kind of either faded or folded. And it's just, yeah. I don't think this model is working. I mean, I think you'd probably agree with that. This is not the model, because if it was the model, we'd be seeing some kind of progress. You know, maybe it wouldn't stop the big issues, but it would at least start to make a dent in them. And right now, I don't know, man. I think white genocide's at the same speed it always was. I think, you know, the racial problems, the racial violence against whites, same speed it ever was. Like, we're not making a dent. So that means we all need to go back to the drawing board. We need to figure something out. We need to come up with a whole different play, a whole different plan. You know, I don't have the answers, but, you know, we really should be having these big, like, sit downs, almost like roundtable kind of discussions, not even necessarily publicly, and probably better not publicly, on right. these, you know, private, like, calls, and get all people who have leadership, people who have influence, and get them all in a discussion and start figuring out, okay, well, what can we do different? Because this what we've been doing isn't doing it. So what can we do that actually would start to make a dent in these problems?
I think you hit it right on the head. You know, it's going to take the leadership of Aryan men to get together and have the councils, have the conversations to make the determinations, and then to disseminate those determinations, you know, to our groups and the people that are willing to work together and fall in line, you know, with the greater objective. You know, we'll bring their entire diversity of tactics together and we'll all contribute what we're talented at, what we're good at toward this common goal, right? As long as our goal is common, as long as we have a unity of purpose, then a diversity of tactics would be the best approach, because we don't necessarily have to dictate, you know, from the top down how everybody does everything, as long as everybody's doing what they do toward the same purpose. It's a little bit more of a decentralized idea, but I think it's you kind of hit it on the head. Until there's a leader, and I don't think there will be until leaders step forward and begin to lead, right? And stop waiting for leaders and become one. Step into these groups, have these tough conversations. And at the very least, you'll find out what people will and won't work with you on. And then if you find a little bit of common ground that you can get a footing, then, you know, then Nick can start doing shows about things, and propagandists can start making the memes, and people can start focusing. Like the Holocaust was a great example. You know, if all of us were kind of pushing on just even the question of the Holocaust, there would be, we've seen the window move. We've seen people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've seen people within these groups push the window to the right. And I think we could still do that, especially if we coordinated more. So I think as long as that's the intention, people are willing to get together and have the conversations. I got to agree with you, but the leadership, I think, will come from, you know, those discussions from just a white man, stand up and lead, like lead your family, lead your community, lead your household, you know, just lead on every level. Otherwise, you're going to fail. And it was because it was your job. It's what you were put here for, was to lead and to build civilizations that last. Right. So, we got to just continue doing that. Right. We seem to, I don't want to say we seem content to let other people take the lead, but it seems like we were easily convinced to sit down because of privilege and because of, you know, all of this leftist bullshit, to step back and kind of relinquish those positions of authority. We've got to take that back now, morally and socially and in every way.
Well, exactly. But I think maybe there's something that me and you actually talked about off air earlier that's quite relevant to this. We were talking about how this, what we're doing here right now, doing this media, that this is not really like a replacement. This is not a surrogate for actually doing the things. That this is supposed to be information and entertainment and an alternative media-wise, maybe propaganda, for people that are already doing the thing. So this is like a supplementary thing that comes on after you've already gone out and done the work, after you've gone out and been involved, after you've built something, after you, you know, put your life together in this way or that way. This is not a substitute for that. And anybody that's selling you on this idea that, you know, just donate $50 to us or something, and therefore that's your activism or your commitment or your contribution to the, you know, the white struggle today, that's not what this is, you know.
Fantastic point.
I think we kind of, it's easy to lose track of that, you know, and it's easy to do that because, you know, look, there's risks involved in this. You know, it's not risk free. You know, people lose jobs, people lose connections with their family over this stuff. It's very real, you know, and it's sad when that happens. But at the same time, we all have to keep in mind, this is a very serious issue. Like the whole thing. I mean, our racial survival is the most serious issue. I mean, if you think about it, it's like your extended family. And like the idea that there's going to be a future 100 years from now with either no white people or almost no white people in it, that's a horrifying thought. That's like a horror movie thought, right?
Right.
So we need to have people understand that's what they're fighting against.
Yeah.
And every little stupid, you know, nitpicky little gay internet drama bullshit, every stupid rumor about Sabbatean Kabbalistic Masons and other retarded brain dead bullshit, like that won't be a thing. Like that's going to fade out like a fart in the wind. But what stays is the racial struggle for our existence.
Yes. Yeah. And we count on that. We count on people eventually, especially noticers, people that are serious about, you know, wanting to do something about this situation, will eventually get over the distraction. They'll stop being distracted by these little petty things. You're kind of right. This isn't really the movement. This is just a couple of guys commenting on what they see, you know, of the problem and kind of where our people are at. But it's really up to every individual to take control of their narrative, right? And kind of like, if you don't want this to go the way you see it going, then you have to write the alternative ending, you know, and you have to live it. It's going to take a personal commitment out of everybody. And I learned early on, I used to think that losing my job was this devastating, terrible thing. I would not be doing what I'm doing had I not lost my job. And I wouldn't even be aware of this. I wouldn't pay attention to any of it. It would just be, like you said, internet drama to me. But this is a serious problem. None of those sacrifices, none of those costs amount to anything in comparison to actually losing this battle, right? There's no cost that's too great to pay for the, you know, the survival of our race and our nation. And I think that our race is tied to our nation, especially in America, where it seems like we're kind of like the last country to get the medicine. You know what I mean? We're watching what's happening in Canada, in Australia, and in Europe. And they're further along than we are, so that we know what's coming next, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. And like all that stuff that they do with the censorship, for example, disarmament, this kind of thing. Like this is all stuff they have planned for us. So, you know, we shouldn't get too, you know, too excited about the idea that we escaped that or something, because unfortunately, I don't think that's the case. I think that we're looking at the same problems.
Yeah, I agree. So you mentioned that you do go live tonight, is that correct? Are you going live?
Yeah, about after you. When do you end?
I normally take this till about 8 o'clock. I know you'd mentioned kind of cutting out a little bit early. Just know that you're totally free to come and go, anytime you need
Oh,
to. I know that you've got
no,
prep and
we're
stuff.
good. We got plenty of time. But I was
Right
wondering, you
on.
might hit like a song for a few minutes, hit the facilities
Yeah,
and
we can
grab.
take a break. Yeah, we can
Yeah,
take a
please.
break and I'll play a
Please.
song and we'll come back in a minute, guys, with more
Epic.
of Nick from Night Nation Review. Join us on the Doom Depot. What an
Hell
awesome
yeah.
guy.
Hell fuck.
Thanks, brother. All right, let's see what we're going to play here. I'm going to play that Kal-El that I didn't get to play earlier.
LOL, let's do it.
Let's
You
go.
introduced me to some new music. I appreciate that, you know.
Okay.
Chat should
Okay.
appreciate it too.
I got a lot more, man. We're finding more every week on the Doom Depot. So stay tuned.
Epic.
Yeah, we just had this conversation all about optics, and I'm like, here's some swastikas. Here's some swastikas for you. it back online here. We got Nick back. Let me mute this tab. There he
is.
We're back live, Nick. We just heard Cal L's universe, and we're gonna have an echo. Let me kill this real fast.
All right.
I thought my mute went through, but I guess it didn't. So I think we fixed that problem. Welcome back.
I thought my mute went through,
but I guess.
You guys
just heard Cal L's universe. Great song. A lot of people ask me, what band is that? I love it when that happens because we have the best playlist for rock and roll music online. And you'll hear a lot of songs here you won't hear anywhere else. We're here with Night Nation Reviews' Nick. And Nick's been kind enough to take some time out of his show prep to come hang out with us. Welcome back, brother. So my audience, they love, especially when we're having serious conversations, they love to spell the word nigger in the chat. Have you noticed that? Does your audience do the same?
They do. There's some tower builders, man. They love to build. White people. They're builders.
Uh-oh, I think you're muted. Or wait, I got to unmute him. I muted him. Let me check. There we go. Okay.
There we go. Hey, test this. Good. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to have a loop again.
Yeah, it's these are some technical struggles, man. It's part of the deal.
No, I fixed it. You know, once the echo starts to happen, you have to kill the echo one time and then it will go away. But if you let that echo continue, it'll just turn into an infinite echo and it turns into an absolute shit show, which, you know, we try to do in the morning, not in the evening.
Well, you know, I like the idea of a morning show. That's pretty good. I wish I was a morning person to be able to do such a thing. I just couldn't handle it,
man.
I don't know how you do it.
Morningtown, man. It's tough. Morningtown is rough because you have to do – you still have to do your, you know, your normal goals, but it's a lot smaller crowd in the morning, you know. Luckily, they're mostly working folks, and they're very dedicated audience. In fact, one of the most amazing audiences ever. But Morningtown can be unforgiving, I noticed. There's times where I played content that I thought was like awesome. I think one time Robert Sepper put out a video that I really wanted to see. It was about Aryan stuff, and I wasn't really clued in on Robert and his identity and all that kind of shit. But I got so fucking roasted for playing that stuff that like the audience started leaving, and I was like, "What's going on? Stop!" You know?
No.
I learned that the chat's always right, and they know exactly what they want. Yeah. And most of the time, they want to spell nigger in the chat room.
Oh, they always want to do that.
Isn't it great? I love it, actually. They're my people.
It's a good tradition. It's a good tradition. I'm not going to lie. But it's funny how that works, right? Like, there's certain kinds of content that they just won't tolerate. And it's weird because, like, they'll tolerate it with certain people and certain audiences, but they won't tolerate it with you. Like, Westin can get away with playing Alex Jones stuff. Like, I would get crucified if I did. You know
absolutely.
What I mean?
Absolutely. I've had that happen. I've had chat mutinies happen from just playing the wrong stuff. So I've gotten where I hit them with audiobooks and then they all fall asleep in the middle of the show. And then I wake them up with the playlist again. It works though. It works. It's kind of a high energy show. My understanding was, and I think it was you that told me when I started, like a lot of people don't know, Night Nation Nick has been kind of a mentor to me from the get go. And I think you were actually the one that told me, like, if you're trying to do like a music stream, you know, that hasn't really been, that's never really worked out for anybody. And then if you're doing a show at like 4 a.m, that's also like a suicide slot. You know what I mean? but you were right. Like it's been tough, and it's taken some really dedicated fans at times that have kind of pulled our show, pulled the wagon through the mud, so to speak. Mm. But you learn from those things, right? Like you learn from making mistakes.
No, it's true, man. It's a refinement process, dude. I mean, like, and I've made a point of this quite a few times. Like, my early shows, I cringe if I watch them. I really, like, actually physically cringe. Like, this, like, hurts. But, you know, that's how it goes, right? You have to learn from doing it. There's no other way to do it. And you learn because, you know, like you said, the chat mutinies, right? You learn that your audience doesn't want to see that. They don't like it for this, that, or the other reason, right? And sometimes they have a point and sometimes they don't, but either which way, they're still the audience. So ultimately, you know, it's about them, you know? So as long as you keep that in mind, you usually be good. You'll work it out. And you did. I mean, you know, you made it a thing and everybody likes the tradition, you know, they like the tradition of the flood show, and it's going to keep becoming a thing. It's going to become even more of a thing, you know? And I think That's really cool, man. That's really cool that you were able to do something that most people aren't able to do. I couldn't do a fucking music show in the morning. I would absolutely tank that thing.
I'm still not sure we can. You know, I mean, we're 2 years into it, and you know, it's crazy. It's the economy and this the censorship, really. You mentioned earlier, like, we really do pay the price for just for saying the things that we do, and we know that we do. We know that we're going to get pushed off of YouTube. We're never going to be able to do expo. We're never going to be able to debut Nick's makeup palette and have 75,000 people watching the stream like some of these gays on YouTube can do. You know, we're lucky to hit 300 or 400 people live, and then maybe 1,000 people after the show. You know, that's been kind of my experience. And you can actually, if you work really hard, you can get those numbers down quite a bit. You know what I mean? But it really is
Working with freaking friends, that'll do it too.
It's a job though. Like I've never worked harder than after I lost my job and started doing this for myself. Like it's 100 hours plus per week. Do you have the same thing? Have you managed to get your kind of your workflow down to a reasonable level?
Well, yeah, no, exactly. Like, that's the funny thing too, right? People think that, like, oh, you're a streamer, you don't even do work. It's like, yeah, no, you're right. I only do like 12 hours of work a day. I was like, I wish I had a 9-to-5 job. That sounds easy. You
I like
know?
when people say you're not an activist, you don't do anything for the movement. And I'm like, well, for the movement, you can argue that, but I'm pretty damn active. Like, we stay really, really busy working on, you know, pro white stuff all the time. It's I couldn't imagine being more active.
Well, exactly. We were talking about that before the show too, is like this, what is it called? IRL maximalist kind of mentality took over, in this idea that, like, that's the only thing that's activism, but that's not really true. Like, IRL is a type of activism. It obviously has its use, and it's a serious use, but there's also, like, activism is just getting the word out. It's getting people to be aware of the issue, you know, and if we're getting to reach people and it's happening, then I'm considering that activism too. It's worth making the distinction between, you know, online and IRL activism. That's fair. But I think to say that there's no value in online activism is crazy. I mean, a lot of, like you mentioned this too, we were talking about this before we were live, but like you said, a lot of people that are actually in these IRL groups, they heard about the IRL groups through these live streams.
Right. They work hand in hand. There's a symbiosis. I think that one should lead to the other. If you're the kind of person that's spending a lot of time online, you're looking into the JQ, you're looking into the white racial consciousness issue, and then you become concerned enough to do something that you. And I've had several people come to me in back channel say that, look, I want to do something about this. You know, can you point me in the right direction? That this ultimately has to lead to active, local active groups, local activism. Municipal civil stuff, right? Like this should eventually, if this motivates people correctly, people should realize that you're not the first one that's been through this, but like, there are other guys out there in your area that are aware of what's going on, and they're organizing together. You know, they are. And sadly, we all get painted as like these crazy militia, you know, extremist groups, but really they're just concerned white people that want to do something more, and they want to coordinate their resources and their efforts to have a bigger impact than just the sum total of the individual efforts, right? Like,
Yeah, very well said.
this should
Very well
build
said.
a community that's force multiplier for each other. That's really where we'll come into play, because I've seen this a lot, in kind of a long question, but ultimately, where's the right wing content? You know, where is the we see Europa. We link people to the greatest story never told. There's a couple of standby documentaries that we all throw around, but where are the people telling the story of our people, you know, in current year, you know, documenting the true narrative? You know what I mean? Instead of just the constant Jew struggle against anti-Semitism, there is a real white awakening happening right now, and it needs to be documented for posterity, right? Who's doing
Oh,
that now?
yeah. Well, I mean, in a big way, that's also where we all come in, is that, you know, it creates a sort of, what would you call it? I guess like a archival memory for our people of where we're at right now. I mean, like, Frank was in the chat earlier, so, like, or maybe he still is. If we were able to have, like, really high resolution documentation of all the stuff that was going on with Aryan Nations, I mean, that would have been fantastic. I mean, we got some footage, but, you know, it's spotty and sometimes grainy, and if we're lucky, the audio is good. But, you know, imagine if they had this kind of tech, you know, like I think that this has always gone back. I mean, imagine if Goebbels had this kind of tech. Like we don't want to squander this gift. Like in a way, history has given us quite a gift with all this stuff where it is. At the same time, of course, it's a double-edged sword. With that, of course, you have, you know, sort of like the Zog surveillance state at the same time. They're listening to us right now. I mean, I always assume there's at least, you know, one SPLC spy and one, you know, Fed spy in the chat at any given moment. Yep. But, you know, you just have to, it's a part of it, right? You just kind of accept they're there. But, you know, at the same time, like, we have such an amazing tool and we need to do the best thing we can with it. Just try our best. And, you know, the other thing is like of all this stuff, many hands makes light work, right? So if just one of us is doing this or five of us is doing this, that's one thing. But if there's hundreds of us doing this, at least as far as the activism collectivization stuff goes, I think it has an effect. I've seen it grown a lot since I started, man. I mean, crap, when Odyssey started to become a streaming thing in 2021, there was like four or five other people doing vaguely similar stuff. Now there's like, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of people that have, you know, nationalism related shows on some level. And that's a lot of options. That's a lot of different audiences. There's a lot of crossover and there's a whole little scene here, yeah. You know, and it's not centered on one platform. I mean, there's multiple platforms, right? You got Odyssey, you got, you know, GTV, White-Pilled, FTJ, I mean, shit, even Twitter to some degree now.
I see a lot of work getting done on Twitter. I see a lot of spaces, a lot of discussions. Even if you go into the anti-white spaces, you will learn a lot about the enemy and how they're thinking and what they're talking about.
Oh, yeah. It's useful. It's very useful. The spaces are good, man. And, you know, Twitter is also really good for growing the audience because it's the closest thing we have to a, like, mainstream platform that we can actually operate on if we're careful. But you know, let me ask you a question. So I've thought for a long time that maybe a smart way to do it would be to have sort of like both, right? So we have, in other words, we would have like a, and this is kind of the way I wanted to do it initially. I wanted to have like the late night show that's like uncensored, it's raw, it gets right to the actual point and the whole truth for the adults. And I wanted to have sort of like a day show that was a little bit softer. It was a little bit more mainstream. It was a little bit more, you know, speaking to the issues, but maybe not full on Jew naming, not full on, you know, 1488 style. It was, you know, a little bit softer. And then, you know, when you're doing that, you could always be like, well, you know, these are the issues and this is what's going on. And well, if you really want to know more about this, if you really want to kind of know, you know, the real dirt of these players behind it, come out to the uncensored show over here on the alternative network and we'll let you know without any kind of coded language. And I thought that would have been a great strategy. I haven't really been able to pull that off. What do you think about that idea? Is that cucking out? Is that selling out? I don't know. It seems there's like a really hardcore segment of our thing that really thinks so.
There will be people that say yes, that it is cucking, but it won't be if it's effective. Like I'm one of these people that like say talk shit about me if you want, but if what we're doing works, then I'm going to keep doing what works until I find something better. You bring up a great point. Like I've actually taken I've been in a couple papers. I've had some, you know, I've had some journalists write crap about me, but really most of the knocks and slings and arrows have come from my own side. Like the biggest, most adversarial stuff has actually come from my side and gatekeeping.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like that's another thing too. Like just basic jealousy and all this sort of stuff doesn't get removed from the picture. People assume that if you're having success with this, that you must have signed some fucking contract with Dr. Kike behind the scene or something, but that's not the case. Like you just said, it's actually what it really is in at least most cases that I'm aware of, it's dedication. I mean, you're doing 100 hours a week at this, you know, I don't know what I'm doing, but it's a lot.
And yeah. Like, I mean, you don't really just have to search for hot takes during the stream. You can really see, like you can look through my content page and really see what I'm really about, you know, the audiobooks, all the content. It's not just all edgy, funny stuff. We get pretty serious about what we're doing and we put a lot of money and effort into it behind the scenes. People don't really get to see that. The donors are aware because they've supported it all, but, probably $20,000 just in audiobooks and all the services related to serving files, given place, that people can go download the stuff for free. I don't try to profit off, you know, other people's work. If Dr. Pierce wrote a book, I'm more than happy to turn that book into an audio book in his voice. I don't want to charge money for that. I want people to just be able to have it. And the more people find out about it, the more people spread the links around. I've seen maybe 500,000 or more chapter downloads of, you know, since we started Mein Kampf, which was the wow. first book. I think last week we finished our 17th audio book. And that was The Holocaust Industry by Finkelstein. And that was a shout out to Carl Rattle for recommending that one. That was a really good, easy dunk. And I'm looking for the next one now. Like, so we do more than stream. And I really do want to, I'd love to just go full-time content producer, but content producers don't make any money online. So I've kind of had to develop this stream, you know, develop the personality as well. Like I was a pretty introverted guy. I was not the kind of person who would want to sit and talk to 500 people online. But if you saw and you liked my video or my deep fake, then I felt really grateful for that. But I'm getting over being shy. I'm getting over all of the, you know, all of the insecurity things, all the personal things that stop somebody from, you know, really becoming as much of an aligning force and a source of inspiration. And just like, I'm on your side, white man. I want you to succeed. I don't see you as competition. I want you to have 10,000 people watching your show. I want you to make $10,000 every stream. That's good for everybody, you know, when we're picking up traction and we're overcoming censorship. So I think that it shows, like, the people that are really for the success of the movement and for the 14 words, it shows in their work, you know. And if you don't have work to show, then are you really in this movement? You know, you've got to eventually want more than just, you're going to want there's to be something of you when you go or when they throw you in jail finally. You know?
Well, you want to earn it if they're going to do it, right?
Yeah.
But well, that's the thing, right? I understand that some people, like, they will only be able to be consumers of this stuff. And for those people that their life only permits that, that's, I'm not going to condemn them for that. But what I will say is, if that's what you want to do, if that's what you have to do, then find a way to contribute to those who are doing it. You know, for a lot of people, that's just financially supporting them. If it's not that, then be a promoter of their stuff. You can do that for free. You know, there's a bunch of ways you can do to amplify the people who are doing the actual work if you can't be one yourself. And, you know, people really underestimate how big of a deal it is that you made these books. You know, like, that's how we met, is I was playing your deep fake of Mein Kampf and the Harry Potter girl reading it.
That's the one that's going to get me thrown in jail someday. You know, they changed the laws. Yeah, they changed the rules at 11 Labs. Like, that has made some waves. And I'm glad that it's out there. Like, a lot of people have downloaded it. But man, you know, just, you know, they're going to come after you someday. They're going to change the law until they can get you for something, and then they're going to come after you. I guess I'm resigned to that idea. I'm resigned to that future if that's what's in the cards. But in the meantime, better make as many waves as possible, right? Like, if you're really in this, then you're not going to stop. Like, I wake up at 2 a.m. every day, Saturdays and Sundays too. I don't have to. I don't have to go live 10 times a week, but try to stop me.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's the dedication, man. And that's why when people are like, you're a grifter or something, it's like, dude, that's the stupidest thing to say to anybody in this thing, because this is the worst place to make money if that's your goal.
Right.
Like, the place to make money is Republican land. It's Democrat land. That's where all the money is. And for people to act like, you know, people do this for money, if they do, they're stupid. Because it's
exactly the worst. Like, you pick the worst. Yeah, you pick the worst crowd to work over. You know, even as a shill, you should go sell hormone blockers to somebody instead, right?
Yeah. Like,
yeah, go follow the path of least resistance and become, you know, one of these shit libs, or, you know, one of these virtue signaling retards. You know,
well, it's not just simply like that. There's a bigger audience there in that sort of mainstreamy sense, but it's also that they don't face any censorship resistance.
If they start a new, artificially boosted. Yeah.
Right, they get artificially boosted, and if they, let's say, they start a website or a business related to the show that they made or something, well, guess what? They can take credit card processing. They don't have to worry about that sort of thing. I mean, they have so many people that just work in the mainstream of content. They don't have any of these problems we have. People don't understand. We're constantly getting knocked off shit all the time. I've been knocked off many things. Not as many maybe as other people, but certainly some. And, you know, right. It's unpleasant. And people that have been in this for a long time, especially people that got a big audience when YouTube still let you do that, like Red Ice, I mean, dude, they were like debanked and crap. And they're not even that extreme, really. So it's like, it just shows you how how ugly they will get at you just for basic, like, you know, 14 words kind of stuff. Like they really hate white people.
The persecution is real. I think maybe a lot of people don't really consider that, but like, yeah, I've had PayPal, Venmo, Cash App all shut down. I'm pretty generous. Like if I'm making a lot of money, I tend to spread that out among other streamers. Yeah. I help out activists. I often have people call me that are just in dire straits. And recently I had a good friend who was kind of at the end of his rope, you know, like he's spent mm-hmm. too long between jobs in a hotel alone by himself. Mm-hmm. And he's in a dark place. And really, it's kind of sad, but just, you know, a couple $100 of security would help him out so much until he could make that next job. And he's got an interview in a couple of days. And so, but I didn't have, like, I have the money. I don't have any way that I can send it to him. They've shut down everything except the crypto wallets. And so, and after working out a complicated workaround, I'm able to send him some support. And it's silly that it's just money in some cases, but they do make it impossible. Even though I've broken no laws, I haven't been kicked from any of these platforms. I haven't even broke a platform rule. But yet they have to take away all of my means of doing commerce with other people, and that is transacting money. It's a shame that they use corporate policy to subvert everything in our culture that the law won't help them subvert.
Well said, man. Well, that's exactly it, right? That's their workaround. When the Constitution tells the government no, they go, okay, well, we'll do it through the private sector, and that's exactly what they do. It's greasy as all hell. And that's it, man. It tells them they can't censor you. So what do? They go to the corporations and they say, shut this guy down. And unfortunately, there pretty much is no corporation that doesn't just go along with that.
Stripe is really the bad guy. Like they settle all settlements for all transactions electronically. So this is why I'm a big fan of crypto. I know a lot of people don't like crypto. They don't really understand blockchain. They look at the coins and they look at the speculation, kind of like the dirty stock market. And that kind of is a little greasy. Some of these exchanges are kind of questionable, but the actual technology, the blockchain that these things are built on is actually, such a great ledger that like I can see why they want to shut it down, because you can't issue these coins. You can't issue these tokens. They have to be mined. They have to be come across fairly and distributed fairly. And so this decentralizes all the power away from a central bank. Of course, you don't really know that until you start looking into how blockchain works. But a lot of people just kind of poo-poo the speculative end, which is, you know, people buying into Bitcoin and trying to get the price up and sell out. There's a lot of pump and dump stuff going on. But there's always going to be this kind of speculation on stuff as long as we allow things like margin trading and shit like that. And that gets more technical. But basically, crypto was a way around central bank control over people's ability to transact. And that was really the fundamental basis of it. And it still is that, to the point now that banks are adopting these blockchains because they can fire all their accountants now and save a lot of money by just letting the blockchain do all of the ledgering.
Yeah, no, man, I'll tell you though, crypto is really a great development. It's a technology that we needed to see come forth, and I really appreciate the fact that it exists. And you know, it's done well by me. I mean, I'm not like crypto rich or something, but it's been a really good bulwark against the absolute nastiness of central banking. And that's why, like you said, they want to shut it down because they don't have control over it. Mm-hmm. Like Bitcoin, especially, has a lot of really great technology that they just can't get their hands around right now. And, you know, they don't like the fact that they just can't turn off the spigot. You know, there is no government that can say, you know, shut down this guy's ability to get Bitcoin. You know, they can just track your wallet and stuff. You know, you have to keep switching wallets up if you don't want them to know exactly how much money you're getting in that wallet and this kind of stuff. But other than that, there's not really much they can do. And they hate that. They absolutely hate that. I mean, with some like Monero, it's even worse. I mean, from their perspective, I mean, you know, you if you really want to send somebody money, guys out there in the audience, you should support shows like this, by the way, just to do it now. Do it now. If you want to send somebody like Flood, some absolute Chad, some fuck your optics Chad that says, fuck you, I'm just able to tell the truth. I don't care what you think about it. And you're afraid because you're afraid of the system retribution coming after you for actually supporting a good white man. Well, you know, you can always do it through Monero and they can't track shit. The FBI has had like $1 million bounty on somebody that can track the basically make a tracking system to figure out how who is getting what, when, where with Monero. And they've not been able to. So right. Nobody's collected that $1 million bounty. So that means nobody's freaking cracked it. So that means, you know, if you send people money on Monero, you're not it's not going to come back to bite you in the ass. So that's a huge thing for our people.
It really is, especially now that we see Antifa getting more, they're getting much more sophisticated. I think you actually aired a report recently where essentially a volunteer army of leftist activists have been tracking the crypto wallets of a lot of influencers on our side. Isn't that right? And they've been basically monitoring and they've even basically issued accounting articles on people like Jared Taylor or, you know, other people that have you know, that have ever received crypto. They can follow the blockchains. There really is no privacy, but Monero is one that is a privacy coin and they can't follow those. Well, they can just watch the wallet and see what comes in and goes out, but that's all they can do. They can't follow the trail of transactions.
Yeah, exactly. It was a SPLC article and I think you and I were both on the report. So that's two mentions from them for me. So they got my number, but I don't give a fuck. Fuck them, dude. These people are absolute.
That's how you
got to
be, right? Like they're gonna watch you. You know, catch me breaking the law. You know what I mean? Because we haven't. You know,
right.
We don't.
Right, and that's why you got to be careful. I mean, I've been pushing that too a lot recently. Like, you know, you can be a criminal or you can be a dissident, but being a criminal dissident is suicide. Like, don't do that.
Probably won't last very long, will it?
Yeah. You won't. They'll snatch you up real quick. I mean, shit. Look what they do. Like when they want to shut down somebody like Paul Miller, right? He's doing his Gypsy Crusader thing, and they want to shut him up, right? They don't care about whatever. They ended up getting him on some like bullshit, like technicality with some gun shit. And he was lucky it was only as bad as it was because, you know, they're stretching things. They really wanted to just shut him up because too many young people, too many kids were, you know, liking his Gypsy Crusader routine. And they didn't like that. They wanted to shut it down. And so they found a fucking technicality. They found out he had a gun. They found out he was technically a felon, I guess. And they grabbed him up. They snatched him up. They kicked his door in at 2 a.m, whatever the hell it was. So, you know, be careful, man. Like if you're a dissident, if you're dissenting against the Jewish power system that is ruling our countries in the West, do not be also a criminal. You know, pick one, right? You can't do both.
I think this is a great segue into maybe, and I know that you're getting close to have to go, but you helped me out really early on, and I think maybe you could help out some other people. If you're just kind of getting started, and maybe you're getting online, you're kind of getting into this space, maybe you feel like you've got something to say, you're thinking about maybe doing a live stream or something, especially with your own experiences, the things that happened to you. I know that you were doxxed, you had some problems with Antifa. Mm-hmm. What do you recommend that somebody who's new to this do to protect themselves and their identity for as long as possible? If that's their intention, what's the best way to go into this smart way based on your own experiences?
That's a fantastic question, man. I would say first and foremost, decide what route you want to take. Like before you even really start, decide what route you want to take from day one. Like before I even really had an episode out of NNR, like I decided, like, I'm not going to hide. Like, I'm not going to advertise who I am. I'm not going to brag about it. I'm not going to post it on a fucking billboard, but I'm also not going to hide because I thought simply that, look, if people really hate you enough, whether it's the, you know, SPLC or whether it's Antifa or whoever it is, or just some people that are supposedly quote unquote on our side, allegedly, right? If they dislike you enough, they can find out who you are. It's not like there is no real hiding on the internet, ultimately. So it's just a matter of like playing hide and seek for a while. So there are things you can do. There are OPSEC things you can do. First and foremost, I would make sure you get rid of all of your social media, like absolute, total, your own social media death. Like just get rid of all of it, like everything and anything. You know, nothing with your name on it, nothing out there. And, you know, the problem is even when you do that, though, you still tend to leave some traces, and not everything that you delete really truly deletes. So there is that. But that's one thing. There are some other ways to do things. I mean, this could be like a 2-hour discussion, but I would try to definitely start with that. Get rid of any kind of traces of what you used to do if you're trying to go the anon route. I would say probably don't use a camera, even if you blur it out. I would say if you really want to go hardcore, I would even use a voice filter. You know, you can buy, you can get cheap voice filters. Like, I think it's called like a voice mod. I think it is on Steam. There's a few different other ones, probably a little more pro level stuff, but I would have that too. I mean, I would do everything you can to obscure and obfuscate what you're actually are, your voice, your image, your location. I would never, ever, 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 ever connect to the internet without a VPN, because one of the things they like to do is they like to try to pull your IP address so they can get a 10-mile radius on where your connection is coming from. So never, ever connect to the internet without a VPN if you are trying to be anon and a dissident. So that's that about that. They will try to do that, and they'll try to correlate it, because that's what these people do. They correlate and they connect all this different information and they cross-reference it. And that's what you want to do, is you want to try to make that as hard as possible. Right. There are some fantastic OPSEC guides out there. I would look that up if you're getting into this, you're starting out. Just search OPSEC, which means operational security. Now, I didn't do that. You know, this is part of the thing, right? They go, this guy has terrible OPSEC. I'm like, yeah, nigga, because I'm not trying to hide.
Right.
That's the difference. You know, I used to even in the beginning on my others, I just used my whole name. I mean, I didn't care. Like, I was like, what are you going to do? Like, I work for myself. You know, I don't live with my family. I mean, they tried to spray that lie to try to implicate them, but I don't. I don't work for anybody. You're not going to get me fired. You know, my neighbors are not going to care. My family members don't care. Most of them don't even know me. My immediate family members don't have any sway over me. Like, what are you going to do? Like, who are you going to influence that's really going to put pressure on me? The answer is nobody. The answer is nobody. I really did do everything I had to do to make myself as independent as possible. Now, I will say I would recommend that, but at the same time, that doesn't mean like make yourself an isolated hermit either, because you know, you have to be truthful with people. You can't hide. If it's too hard to tell your family what you really think, the people you know, if they don't know what you're, that doesn't mean they have to agree with you. Be very clear. It doesn't mean they have to agree with you. They probably won't, but they have to be able to respect that you're an adult. You have your own opinions. If they don't like it, just don't talk about it with you. But if they can't know that, then it's always something they can hold over your head.
Right.
And the last thing I'll throw out there before the end of this set part, I'll say, don't misrepresent yourself, right? If you're not really like Mr. White, don't represent yourself as Mr. White. Represent yourself as whatever you are, you know? And, you know, if you are just an average white guy, then just be an average white guy, you know? And I would say, don't try to overextend it. A lot of people try to like rep themselves as like, I'm Hitler 2.0. I'm coming for to save the white race. It's like, come on, man. Come back to reality. No, you're not. Shut up.
Yeah, you're going to get washed out pretty quick if you're in here. I found that if you're trying to lie to people, you can't maintain that. Nobody has the resources, the energy it takes to maintain, you know, lies forever. That's one of the reasons that, like, especially we've kind of skirted around recent drama, but really the ultimate cure is just to continue doing what you do. And the liars tend to self-destruct and implode. And I think that we've seen that recently as well.
Oh yeah, and ultimately they get so mad and so bent out of shape that they effectively kamikaze mission. You know, that's basically what happened in that recent shit. So, right. You know, it's just like, look, truth is our greatest weapon. Truth is the actual thing we have that they don't have. That's the only thing we have on our side that they really don't. Like, they have all the money, all the resources, all the governmental and military power. They got all the shit as far as like easy power goes. What we have that they don't have is the truth. They have to always twist everything. They, being the Jewish system, they always have to misrepresent things. They have to make it go and spin in their favor. We don't have to do that. We actually have the power to just say things as they are and force them to cope with it. And if we give that up because we're trying to push some other little agenda of our own, well, you know, then we weaken ourselves. We weaken ourselves a lot. And usually when people do that for their own personal interest, for their own personal gain, it usually backfires. I've seen it a number of times, not just in recent bullshit. I've seen it a number of times, and I'll probably see it a number more because people don't learn that lesson. You're not going to hide shit on the internet. If you're going to be representing yourself as something, you better be that something. That's why I don't do that. I'm literally just put myself, I'm an average white guy. I'm a commentator. I'm a guy that pays attention to a lot of this stuff. I'm a guy that cares a lot about basically the 14 words, to put it in a nutshell. I care about the future of white people. I care about the future of my country. It's that simple. You know, I'm not the savior. I'm not the leader. I'm not Hitler too. I'm not any of those things. I'm not qualified, and I don't try to pretend that I am, you know. And I think people, they overextend themselves trying to like be Mr. Big Nigga. And at the end of the day, you end up being found out that you're not the head nigga in charge. And it's rough when that happens. So Don't overextend yourself, I guess, would be my advice on that.
Isn't that a big nigger thing to say, though? Like, isn't that this is what I found is that's true. Like, if you're honest and you're honest with yourself, then you're going to not only do you not have to spend a lot of energy and resources hiding, covering tracks and things like that, but you actually have natural law on your side. And I think that I think that the entire artificial Jewish power structure is kind of a mockery of actually natural law and where we stand in it. And as long as you have the truth on your side, then you will be kind of protected. I mean, I've kind of been, as long as you're staying truthful, other truthful people will see you. They will see through the lies. The noticers will notice the patterns. Like if you're actually dealing with people that want the truth to be told, then you're going to be immediately sniffed out by those people if you're lying. And you're not going to be able to maintain the illusion. So as long as we're on the side of truth and we have truth on our side, I think that there's a natural law built around that. And that's what should happen, right? Is like from doing this and from, you know, from kind of committing yourself to honesty and to truth, you'll kind of learn how natural law works for you just through your own experiences. And usually a lot of people trying to like stab you and take you down too, right? Like you'll find out that you actually have the truth on your side, and that there's a value to that. That like it makes you unstoppable in some ways.
No, very true, man. And I mean, if you think about it, whether you are a guy that wants to resurrect the values of National Socialism, or you want to resurrect the supremacy of the white race, or you want to resurrect Christianity as a governing principle, all of these are reflections of natural law. And I think people have really lost sight of that in all those camps. But I think that at the heart of all those different, I guess, brands for the same thing in a different way, or different approaches to the same thing, that's really at the heart of all of them. And if we can kind of go back to that fundamental, that first principle, I think we will really start to resurrect what we're actually seeking. And what's more, we'll try to actually bring that into the present, into our situation, into our reality, into our country, into our race now, not, you know, 100 years ago, right? So it's great to be a fan of everything that has been amazing and impressive in those times past. But what we really need is the current version of these things. And, you know, I think sometimes people get lost in that, just being so in awe of what was once done. And I think we've got to figure out a way to bring that right into the present. But speaking of the present, Flood, it's been a fantastic talk, man, but I do have to hit the old road.
Why is that, Nick? Where can people find you?
So I got to go live, man. And that's going to be on FTJ. It's going to be White Pill too. I'm going to stick it up on White Pill. Absolutely. It's going to be on Odyssey and Rumble. Come check it out after Flood.
Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Nick from Night Nation. He's going to be going live probably before this show ends by a few minutes, but he runs a 15-minute intro. Don't you worry, guys. Nick, thanks so much for spending time with us. You were right. A lot of stuff we talked about could be future two-hour conversations, and I hope that we get an opportunity to have those conversations in the future.
Yes, sir. We'll absolutely will. And I'll say also before I hit the road here, everybody, make sure you support Flood. You know, he's taken a beating recently in some dumb shit, and don't let him go hanging out in the cold here. Let's get him some of them shekels. Keep this thing rolling. And with that, man, good night, sir.
You're very kind, sir. Thank you very much, guys. Throw some Romans up for Night Nation review.